SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races here at beautiful Tampa Bay Downs, and Marty McGee, this is so much fun. Anything that's a new experience, I'm a tither.
Well, I'll tell you, it's like, we okay there, Beck?
Yeah,
okay.
There we go.
We got like, it was like 40 degrees this morning when I was home.
You're damn right it was.
I was trying to get in the sun and get warmed up a little bit, and it wasn't working, so... I went and saw Kathleen O'Connell briefly, and Kim Carroll was here with the horses that arrived overnight from New Orleans, Dreammaker, and the 2018 Sam Davis winner, Flameaway. He's running one of the undercard races here on Saturday.
But, oh, cool.
They got a real nice backside here. It's really easy to get around, and it's set up so where you can actually figure out which barn is which, as opposed to the thing at like Churchill or something at Keeneland, some of the other places where they are. But yeah, this is a nice little track. You call it little, but it's a normal size track. But when you're here at the races today, it's quiet.
Yeah,
and it reminds me of the old River Downs, is what it does.
Wow, that's a good analogy.
I used to like to go to the old River Downs. It was just a nice place to hang out.
You know, it for years it had the reputation, and still does to some degree, about this main track being, you know, a little deeper, a little sandier, and you know, that I can remember Carl Nafsker going back to Street Sense era, and the old racetrack maxim, there were a few places during the winter, if you went in with a horse that you were looking to get fit for the next for the spring, you know, if you went to Tampa, if you went to fairgrounds, you at the end of the meet, you'd have a fit horse just by virtue of you know, the surface and getting over it. And it is a for whatever reason, it's a quirky, it feels like it's still a quirky surface.
Probably is, but it is what you said it is. It's a good place to winter. That's why so many of the guys come here. I'll say one thing not in favor of Tampa, that is, it seems like the purse structure is not commensurate with the kind of competition you get here. You get the Motts and the Chad Browns and the
Clement.
And Clement and Pletcher all shipping over here with their good horses, and then I think a first level allowance is something like $22,000, which if you compare it to Aqueduct or Oaklawn, it's kind of ridiculous. But that's an inside baseball issue I'd rather not get into. But they do, all the horsemen really praise this turf course. You rarely hear anything bad about that. And as you know, as a handicapper, just observing it day to day, it's fun to bet on these races.
It's a funny, to me, it's been a while since I've played Tampa. When we were on in the afternoons, going back, and Tampa ran on Tuesdays, we would have our fun Tampa Tuesday. You know, Monday we would do the recapping, and then at 4 o'clock, on a Tuesday, we'd play Tampa races, and I really enjoyed it. And then there was that year Peter Berube made the decision that they were going to match up with the big circuits and go in that direction. And so after Tampa Tuesday disappeared, I kind of got away from playing it, other than, you know, the two or three big winter days.
Well, they kind of piggyback, I guess, with Gulfstream and some of the other tracks. But last time I looked, Steve, the average per day handle here was about $4 million, which is solid. And I remember writing a few years ago when you said that you want me to switch mic?
No, you're good. I'm going to just put this here and maybe pick up a little bit extra volume.
Okay. But I remember writing 5 or 6 years ago when Peter Berube made that decision to go to the more mainstream type of schedules. Now they run a Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. That was kind of the sign they were entering the big time, because you do have your quote-unquote off tracks that tend to run on the Mondays and the Tuesdays.
Well, the card that they're going to put on Saturday shapes up beautifully. And, of course, now with Santa Anita postponed and with the Big Cap and the Kill Row, and, you know, I haven't mentioned this yet, but I think on Sunday was going to be the Santa Isabel for the three-year-old fillies. So that they're affected as well, of course. Without those races, we're really going to be focused on New York and on Tampa, and let's get, you know, in advance of the draw, are we still looking at that same pack of 10?
It was going to be 10. I put something on Twitter yesterday from Aaron Wellman of Eclipse Thoroughbred Partners. They are not going to run current.
Huh.
He would have been somewhat of an interesting horse in there, trying the dirt again. He had a kind of a no try in the Kentucky Jockey Club at the end of his two-year-old year, but we do have a solid field of nine. It looks like Win Win Win, who picks up Irad Ortiz Jr., will be the favorite, with Well Defined and Dreammaker for Mark Cassie, probably your second and third choices. Tacitus for Bill Mott. He'd worked at least once that I know of with Hidden Scroll in the mornings there at Payson.
And got his brains beat in, from what I hear.
And Jose Ortiz has the right here. Both the Ortiz brothers and Le Peru and Bravo and I'm leaving out somebody. Florent Giroux are all going to be here riding throughout the card on Saturday. Louis Saez was going to ride current, but he's not going to be here now. But it looks like a pretty solid field of nine that we got for the Tampa Bay Derby, which, of course, is one of the points races toward the May 4th Kentucky Derby.
Your conversations with Mike Trombetta and Win-Win-Win bypassed the Sam Davis, and that actually, in my own conversations with Trombetta, that pretty much was a plan from fairly quickly after the Pasco to wait and to work on his stamina, some thoughts, because he's working like a mad horse.
Yeah, he is. Every one of his races have been good. Now he steps up to tougher competition and the two turns for the first time. You got to question whether or not he'll be able to get the classic type distances like the Derby. He is by hat trick. I think Mike is just wanting to go ahead and get this done, see what he can do in this type of race, and proceed from there. I've known Mike for 30 years. I remember him playing. I was the shortstop, and he was the first baseman on one of our teams there at Pimlico. But you know, he's
a little tall for a shortstop.
No, I was, who, me?
Trombetta.
No, he was first baseman.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
I could see him,
yeah.
The big angular.
Sometimes he caught it and sometimes he didn't when I threw it over there.
But he's moving more toward a Book Powell kind of a stance these days. But it used to be kind of Dave Kingman-esque. Now he's looking more like Book.
I don't know about that. I'd stick with Kingman. But he's such a nice guy.
Yeah.
I'm really, and he's so level-headed and realistic, and he's a good handicapper. You know, he can talk the language that we as handicappers talk. So, he's keenly aware of Well Defined having a whole lot of speed in here, and so does his horse, and how's that going to play out? So, I'm going to talk to him tomorrow morning and see what he says about that. How they got it all figured out.
I did see your quotes from Trombetta regarding Julian Pimentel losing the mount, and Mike said, in a shrugging of the shoulders, you know how that goes, you do. I mean, you, but at the same time, you do find it a little maddening.
You do. I mean, it's happened for ever since we came around. Jerry Bailey, all the big fish in the pond eat the little fish, and that's the way it goes. And that's what Mike said, that everybody knows how this works. So without putting words in anybody's mouth, I would guess that it was Mrs. Weber's call or maybe
George Hill.
Steve Rushing is the agent for IRAD, and he and Mike go back 30 years.
Yep. Yep.
You know, so
there you go.
And this might just be an open weekend for IRAD. You know, they don't have much at Gulfstream this weekend in terms of the stakes action. So this might be a one-off for him. So, we'll see what happens.
Some thoughts about Victor Barboza's horse, because they were looking at the Gotham and to go the one-turn mile, which seemed to be a natural progression. He ran a very good second to Call Paul in the Swale. And, here's another horse that actually has a lot of the same look that Win-Win-Win had going into Pasco. And I just, he's a Fed Biz out of a Sharp Humor mare, and I was going to respect Zenden going to New York, and the fact that he comes here for the two-turn opportunity, that adds more speed to the party.
Well, maybe it was the presence of Instagram in the Gotham that persuaded them to come.
I think Barboza vacated that came this way even before the Instagram news. I think so.
Okay, perhaps, but this is kind of his first foray into these deeper waters. Both Barboza and Zenden, he adds an element of speed that I have kind of neglected to address. But coming out of the one turn races and, as you said, out of the Swale, so. There will be an honest pace at the very least in this race on Saturday.
You obviously had a chance to talk to Todd Pletcher, who not only had considered Current, but So Alive, it appears, out of the Davis, it had been intended, and then it took him forever to get back on the work tab.
Yeah, I have not talked to him about that.
Okay.
But that was kind of an anomaly in that race in terms of. You and I are looking right here at the three-quarter pole. When the field, he was probably 20, 25 lengths out of it.
Yep.
It was like it was an incredible thing. And he was running down the stretch. Of course, he had given so much ground. That happens a lot, with horses like that. But he got beat, 8 or 10 lengths by the winner and was never in it. I'd be curious as to what Todd might have in mind for him down the road. Obviously, there's a lot of options.
Well, and wasn't the funny part about that? Wasn't that the same exact experience that Vino Rosso had when he came here? Right, that he had fallen way out of it and looked. I'm just going to pull this up because there was something similar the way Vino Rosso performed here at this track.
He wasn't that far back, but at the quarter pole, you could tell he was beat. He just wasn't keeping up on from the half mile pole to the quarter pole, and he was and then he came on belatedly.
Right, right.
So, and he's turned out to be okay.
Well, the rest of this group will get a little bit more of a reach, it would seem. But beyond the feature, the Florida Oaks, I've always thought it was a little strange that when the time we got to the three-year-old fillies, the pinnacle of the program suddenly switches to turf.
Yeah, and you got Concrete Rose in there with Leparuta ride for Rusty Arnold. She was pretty good last year as a two-year-old. It looks like she'll probably be the favorite. We've got Stellar Agent for Jorge Abreu. They're going to have a pretty decent-sized field for that, but I agree with you. The Florida Oaks used to be a dirt race back in the day, and I'm thinking, who did Neil Howard win the Kentucky Oaks with? Why am I putting that together? His winner in 2000. I thought she had maybe prepped here in that race on the dirt, but it seems like 10 years ago or so they moved it over to the grass. And, of course, you always fill the grass races, so I guess that's one component to why they went ahead and switched it.
Anybody else that of note that is participating?
In the Florida Oaks?
Yeah.
Let's see here. Winter Sunset, Winning Envelope, Mega Fortune for John Kimmel, Her Royal Highness for a guy named Graham Motion, Elsa for Mike Stidham. Chad is going to have at least one in here. I think maybe a filly named Blowout. Chad's going to have four or five over here on the day. I'm not getting real definite on names other than Rimska for the for the Hillsboro, the grade three for fillies and mares grade two for fillies and mares on the grass.
And it was the lovely Secret Status that you were reaching for.
I'm pretty sure
she
ran
did. She did. She okay. She won. You bet. She won the
okay,
Florida Oaks.
Yeah.
He's Marty McGee. He knows the name of every single Kentucky Derby winner. And one day on the show, you're going to run them all down.
Actually, I'm bad on my 1880s.
Ooh,
I'm not like Bill Knack. Have you read that story one of the last ones he wrote about how he got up on the table at Tuesday
yes.
and did that? Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Well, you should do that. We're gonna put you on. We should put you on the spot. That'd be great. I want to do something with these new dark days, these added dark days at Saratoga. I want to do something at the museum, and a series of conversations, or even some readings. I want to have a series of whether they're pundits or journalists or whoever that you know, read some Joe Palmer and you know, read some maybe some Runyon, you know what I mean, you know, kind of like a almost like performance art.
Nicely with the
exactly
eating, the eating contest. Now another piece of pie.
A story goes with it is my favorite. I read that once. I did that for Christmas for one of our Christmas bests of. It's hard work to do it with the intonations and with the accents and trying to the characterizations.
Yeah, you probably have to rehearse a little bit.
A little bit. Let's talk about the rest of the action, the Hillsboro, certainly, and run down some of the highlights of the rest of these fields before we talk about the weekend future wagers.
Hawksmoor makes her final start with Joe Bravo. I ran into Delacour back there on the backside this morning, and you know, might be a little sentimental. I think this is her 24th and final career start. She's going to be bred to Kitten's Joy. She will be one of the favorites after having won the Endeavor here on the Davis undercard. She runs against Remska and maybe another horse for Chad. I think on the Moon Again gets ridden by Jose in that race. But it's a decent sized field. It looks like maybe eight or so for the Hillsboro. Like I said, Flame Away runs in the Challenger. That's a mile and a 16th race for older horses. It's $1 million. Reride is in there. Maybe Jay's Way coming over for Midwest Thoroughbreds. And a horse named Bourbon Resolution for Wilkes. You know, we'll know more about this a little bit later today. And then they've got a three-year-old turf race going a mile called the Columbia at $75,000. Kimmel is bringing over a horse named Jerome Avenue, who won last out at Gulfstream. Michelle Nihay with a horse named Royal Urn. And don't have a whole lot more on this. Grand Motion with English B. And Trombetta with a horse named Global Access. So, you know, that's usually a pretty good race, too. It's a terrific card here on these big Saturdays they have here.
The Challenger, the Columbia, the Florida Oaks, the Hillsboro, and the Tampa Bay Derby. Your slate that will come together today in the racing office, and then we will dive into it in earnest. Let's dive into the Kentucky Derby and Kentucky Oaks future wager. This is pool three for the boys and the only pool for the girls.
Yes, it is. And this happens every year. The mutual field is about even money in pool one. Then it's about 5-2 in pool two. And then it starts creeping up a little bit. They've got it 4-1 on a morning line. That's what it closed at last year for the 2018 Kentucky Derby future wager. Obviously, with Game Winner, who was 5-1 in pool one, 5-1 in pool two, and then now on a morning line, 5-1 for pool three. What kind of effect is it going to be that he doesn't get to run this weekend in terms of how the bettors address that? Of course, that's a minor issue in terms of, you know, what Bob Baffert is facing in terms of what's he actually going to do with him. Bourbon War, 12-1, Code of Honor, 8-1. Those are the second and first finishers last weekend. That seems about right. Improbable, 8-1. Same thing for him as Game Winner. What happens with him? A couple other horses. War of Will at 10-1. Roadster for Baffert at 15-1. He obviously got his prep in. But you know, I think that you know, just looking ahead a little bit to the Florida Derby, I think with that huge gallop out and the way he closed, Bourbon War will probably be the favorite in that race. What do you think about that? Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah. Hidden Scroll, you know, Mott's talking about that. But this pool three, the combined handle last year was almost 400,000. It seems like pool two, for whatever reason, draws the biggest handles of all these four pools that they've got. The Oaks last year only got 70,000, counting Wynn and Exacta. Let's take a look at that, Steve. Bellafina 5-1 on the morning line as the very lukewarm morning line favorite in a field of 24. The field is 8-1. They've also got Restless Rider, who I think I saw on Twitter this morning worked at Gulfstream before dawn for Kenny McPeak. Jaywalk, clearly disappointing last week. She's also 8-1, chasing yesterday for Baffert, 8-1. The way this whole thing shakes out is just more or less says to you, this is a way wide open, at this point, Renewal of the Oaks.
Well, and just looking up and down at a couple of names, and it's interesting that the respect given to Jeltren, Alexis Delgado's upset winner, but frankly, off of that performance, the 91 buyer, there's reason to respect her, 15-1. The horse that looks like a value to me, if she's going to stay at this price, Feedback, who's headed to the Ashland, 20-1?
Yeah, I don't know why Chad wouldn't have just gone ahead and run her last week. You would think that the way it shook out, she might have won the race. But she's only run twice before. Chad had that horse that won real impressively on Sunday, Dunbar Road, first time out. I don't know what she beat. She got about,
I think 79 or 76.
76,
76
79,
something like that, yeah.
You know, they all look good when they're winning by 10, but, Serengeti Empress, 10-1. She was a real force in her last race.
I was there for that. By the way, speaking of a force, did you see Amos in the? Did you see Amos's outfit?
Yeah, was that he and his wife?
He and Colleen.
Yeah.
As the Hankies.
Yeah, the penalty.
Hysterical.
Yeah.
He's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, back to the boys then, because the girls don't seem all that exciting. Although we should note that you can also bet here the Oaks Derby Double future.
You can, and I just kind of stumbled upon that. Last year was the first year they offered that, and let's see, what was the Oaks Derby Double handled almost 70,000 last year, so maybe it kind of cannibalizes the Derby and the Oaks handle. So if you put everything together last year, they handled 540,000, all three of the pools.
Well, and let's let people know, the Monomoy Girl Justified Double, the future, paid $71.
Yeah, I think the real thing on Derby Day paid, I think, about $30.
I think 30 is right. And so there was a surprising value. And, of course, Justify at this point, at the same, if we're using the same weekend, was he just the maiden winner at that? Yeah, it would have been this weekend. He ran the day after the San Felipe. He ran on the Sunday when he won the allowance. So okay. on and that race, I'm trying to think of when it was on the card, that may have gone off after the race. But anyway, $71, not a bad value. Back to the boys for a second, Mart, because I do want to hit on a couple of horses. Another twist of fate. When you're playing these futures, for me, I want mystery horses and a horse that you can project at the bigger prices. That's what's fun about these. And another twist of fate, I think is going to be completely forgotten about. He's going to show up at Sunland for Blaine Wright, and we don't know what this horse can do on the dirt.
No, we don't. I mean, I don't know what you want me to say about that, because I'm just as buffaloed as anybody about him.
Isn't that what you want though? I mean, the horse that ran a mid 90s buyer at in the El Camino Real, and if he translates onto the dirt, and I know we go through this exercise with every Greeley's Galaxy that comes along, and I've been into frank conversation. Unfortunately, there wasn't a Hollywood Derby future to bet, or whatever big turf stake that he won later in the year. So it didn't make up for it. But to me, this is what you want in a future wager.
Yeah, I don't know. What about Country House? He's 50-1 on the morning. Yeah. What if he jumped up and passed them all in the Louisiana Derby and looks good, wins by three? He's 8 or 10-1 in the Kentucky Derby.
Yeah, that's fair.
The thing about this is you're trying to get value. And to me, playing the exactas would be the way to go.
Yeah.
Just try and
catch
it, Because I think the Derby exacta last year was Justify or Good Magic. I think for pool three, it paid like $238.
Yeah,
it was something big.
Yeah. Unbelievable. But be imaginative. That's the whole point when it comes to this. Speaking of imagination, what strikes your fancy about Tampa? When are we going to Christino's?
Let's see. I got some friends coming in Friday, so maybe maybe tomorrow night.
All right.
Or maybe tonight. I don't know.
All right.
I know that this happened the Wednesday of Sam Davis week. I hit a lick. So I will be handicapping today for the Wednesday card.
Off the turf, though.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. They announced that yesterday because it got swamped. And don't worry. This wind will dry that course out.
Yeah, we're having no more rain the rest of the week.
So. No, it's going to be gorgeous.
And although it was really cold today, it was supposed to warm up starting tomorrow.
Yeah, that's what I heard as well. And frankly, everywhere I've gone, it's me, folks. Wherever I go, it's unseasonably cold. I'm in Vegas. They got snow. It was in New Orleans. It was cold and rainy every day. I mean, it's just crazy what I've everywhere I've been so far on this whirlwind tour. Question while we got you, your impressions from last weekend and your Fountain of Youth thoughts.
Well, I think that Hidden Scroll deserves another chance. I'm sure that Billy's working right now or thinking right now about how to get him to rate more kindly and not go chasing 132-1 shots. And
I've chased a couple of 132-1 shots.
You know, the Bourbon, I really do think that Bourbon War will be the favorite in the Florida Derby because people extrapolate, you know, if they'd gone another 16th of a mile, he's going to win by open length. So Johnny Velasquez is so good. I mean, if you give him any kind of opportunity, he's gonna put the right ride on. And so that was good. There was I was real surprised, like Marcus Hurst was on Twitter, that Zulu Alpha paid $420. I mean, Mike Welch and I were sitting there watching on the monitor, and they run the race because we were busy with our post Fountain of Youth stuff, and they flashed up there number 9 was even money. I'm like, what? How did that happen? So, because you figured the Mod Horse Channel Maker was going to be the favorite.
The 13 hole wasn't doing him any favors.
Anyway, the Jeltran thing was a complete shock. The bridge jumpers got burned. I think it was like 270,000 out of 320 or so out of the show pool went down the tubes. And I should always be more vigilant on seeing when that opportunity presents itself, because when it does, I like to bet $20 on a couple of the other ones or whatever.
But you would have had to have this one. We've discussed this week in terms of at least in terms of the multi race wagers. You had to hit the all button to get to Jeltran, and because
absolutely.
And I know there's people that are saying, you know, that even on the sheets. Well, she'd run a 9 on Thoroughgraph. The horses that were closest to Jaywalk had run 8s. So it's not like Jeltran, you know, made this mammoth leap from double-digit teens, down to a basically about a 3 on Thoroughgraph. That was not, if there was going to be somebody other than Jaywalk, it could have been any of them.
Yeah. You had to go all, but it was only a 7-horse field.
Exactly, that was the one thing. And between Precious and Zulu Alpha, I mean, anybody listened to the show? I mean, we all piled on Zulu Alpha, frankly. Nick Tamaro, who singled him toward on doubles, and Nick bailed a lot of people out on Friday last week, and. James Scully. I mean, we all kind of acknowledge that if Zulu Alpha, you know, if he ran his race and had a clean trip, that he was much the horse to beat. So
absolutely,
there were ways to engineer what ended up being a decent, more than a decent payout. So lay out, Marty, after this weekend, and of course in 2 weeks we got the Gulfstream sale, Fezzik Tipton, and Florida Derby week, and then it's home for Keeneland.
Actually, Dave Grinning's coming in starting about Sunday the 24th. I'm going home.
There
so
we go.
I go home a week early, and Dave takes my spot, and he's. It's all him and Mike Welch, Florida Derby week. Actually, next weekend I'm going to Orlando to see my buddy Keith Fustel. His son, Connor, plays for Delgado Community College. He's starting on the baseball team. He's a freshman, and they're playing at Lake Buena Vista there in Orlando at the ESPN
Center. How fun.
Going up there for a Friday game and a Saturday game. Be with my man Keith.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, this opportunity to cross paths and be here together at Oldsmar at lovely, quaint Stella Thayer's little track that could.
All right, Mick. Do I have to be on Friday now, too?
Yeah, of course you do. Right. You're gonna, okay. What else you got to do? Right. Come on.
See you later.
All right. Marty McGee, everybody. Just too much fun with the one and only DRF McGee. Let's take a break. We'll come back to Tampa. And, you know, since we're here and Seth Mero is on next, Marty, I think we have to go to Derby Lane as well and have the big farewell visit to. I think so. Brutal. Just awful. Not right. It's not right. It isn't right. It isn't fitting. It isn't fitting. Not fitting. Back to Tampa after this. Seth Mero joins us. He's going to be really jealous that I'm here. Back after a break.
Latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on?
DRF Sports Forum Racing Festival on sale now.
Weekly Benny
New York's premier three-day racing festival.
DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and kept the summer on Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at Tampa, and I know that those words are going to make Seth Mero really jealous. This is one of his favorite places. Good morning.
You are. You're killing me. It is why. And I was trying to think, as I was listening to the last segment that you talked about it, I was trying to think when I've been there last, and it's been a while. I haven't been down that way in a while, but you've got me... hankering to get back, and I, as you talked, I pulled up the Derby Lane website. They said they're going until December 31st, 2020, so I have that until to do a Tampa Derby Lane, and I want to get down to the Sarasota Town Club as well, so triple header. So I got to make it fast, I guess.
Well, you got a little bit, and I know, yeah, a lot of the ones that really care that you know are going to race the puppies as long as they can, and that includes Palm Beach Kennel Club, and you know, I mean, Palm Beach Kennel Club in particular. I mean, that property's got to be worth a fortune next to the airport, and I'm sure they could have packed it in and sold off at any time. Really, was that a Rooney property?
I don't know, but I made my first visit there a couple of years ago when we were down covering the Florida Derby. It was funny. You look, and there's a mile of parking lot, and you look, and they have pictures on the wall of the days when the parking lot was jam packed. And
yeah,
I mean it's a different age.
Yeah, I think a couple of winters ago when I got to spend quite a bit of time with John Parada, and we did really a classic, and I'm glad now that we did it. You know, with between Gulfstream in the afternoon, then we made it to both Dania High Line and to Hollywood for the dogs, and that's the classic. That's the Steve Chris trifecta.
I have never done Highline. There's one that
Highline's great.
Yeah.
How do you? Oh, it's great. It's you know, having grown up near Hartford, Highline came to Connecticut, and I don't know why, but it came to Connecticut, and it was in they had Bridgeport had a Fronton. We had Hartford, Milford. I think Milford had a Fronton, too. There were at least three. And so Highline, you know, was fun. And you know, the era of Joey, the great Joey Kornbluth. I'll tell you, Highline, I find it exciting and fun. And Parada's got a system, too.
I think this. Well, I was gonna. It's a little too human involved for me. Let's put it that way. But I remember the days of the Frontons down in Connecticut. They just. It's only in Florida now, right? And how many are left? And you know.
Well, there's been some crazy things with the one in Miami. They brought in University of Miami. Football players, I think, or athletes from the University of Miami, and taught them how to play. It some crazy, yeah, some really nutty things. I'm going to put this up on Twitter because our friend Sheldon Glass is listening over on the East Coast, and Shelley just sent the picture of his greyhound that he adopted, and I've been browbeating Tina because I would love to adopt a greyhound because they say they are the greatest lap dog. All they'll do is curl up in a ball and lay there like 19 hours a day.
I used to park at my sister's house, who was maybe 3 or 4 blocks from the track, and walk over to the track. So this is going back a few years, but there was a few times on my walk to the track where I passed Steve Chris's wife walking their greyhounds.
Sure. Robin, I love it. Well, we'll see. Tina's slowly warming to the dog idea, and unfortunately, the greyhound adoption system is outstanding. There's a very good feeder system that have been taking them off the track for years. Yeah, Sheldon echoes. He says the most incredible pet that you could possibly want. And if you're in the market, don't worry that your greyhound, it's not going to be like that scene in Funny Farm where Chevy Chase lets the dog out and the dog just runs away. that's everybody's great fear that you're gonna take him off the leash and he's just gonna run and you'll just never get him again. He's just they'll find him in California. Well, I wish you were here. So do I. Yeah.
The Sarasota Kennel Club. I mean, my father was retired down there for a year, so I'd go down and visit him down in Bradenton. for a week or two, and we would go over to the Sarasota Kennel Club, and I remember they had a prime rib buffet, and you think, oh, dog track buffet, how can that be? It was great. Prime rib, and you were up on the fourth floor overlooking the track, and you would call up and say, I want a table at the window. And a lot of nights, there wouldn't be a table at the window available. Yeah. So even, you know, going back, I mean, we're talking 20 years ago or so, but even then, it was fairly popular. You know, in the wintertime, snowbirds, and that's when Sarasota was open, and there would be a good crowd there. But, you know, as I say, I've been since, and that was at the dog track again over near Gulfstream, and yeah, it's different now as far as the number of people who show up and the people on the apron, and it's kind of sad.
Yeah. I will make a visit in your honor.
Thank you.
All right, because it's a nice place. It's a very nice place.
And you mentioned your Twitter feed just before you move on. I want to recommend, because you mentioned this earlier too, but I want to make sure people have to check out the Steve Bick Twitter feed, because the penalty flag is hilarious.
Well, that's our man. I mean, he is Amos. He and his wife Colleen, they make a special dedicated effort every year
that was a stroke of genius.
And somebody said, it's not a good costume if you have to think about what it is. And I said, I started to write to the guy on Twitter, if you were in New Orleans,
exactly,
you don't have to worry.
Yeah, we were down covering the Pegasus, and I interviewed Dallas Stewart. He was in town, and he had been to the game, what was it, a week or two before, and he was still livid about it. You're exactly right. If you were in New Orleans, you're a New Orleans fan. There is no guessing at what that costume is.
Exactly. Well, I got a great reaction. I put it on both Twitter and Facebook. People absolutely loved it. Amos is such a good sport and just a tremendous character. Seth, I thought when you mentioned the Twitter feed, you might be referencing the back-to-back. I put those two tweets up this morning in advance of Jim Cassidy's visit. For those of you that missed it, you can catch it on the replay tomorrow morning at about 6:20 to 6:45. Jim discussing, you know, what really now is just a holding pattern and a wait and see. Things are in the hands of Dennis Moore to make whatever repairs he deems appropriate to the main track. And you know, I referenced in a conversation with Jim and then with links to the 2012 New York Task Force on Racehorse Safety, which came out of the similar spate of fatalities. And what's bizarre about this is really over the same kind of a period of time and exactly 21 horses affected. And in New York, they came to several conclusions, really from every angle, Seth. And I don't know how recently you have visited that experience, but when you read through what was accomplished by that task force and the lasting impact it's had, Jim Cassidy, though, really feels like the protections that were found in New York that were installed, he felt are more or less in place in California, and that this really is strictly track related.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I did go down the Twitter feed and saw that, and when I heard the announcement, within the past 24 hours or so as it's come out that San Anil was going to suspend indefinitely, I thought of that. I thought of, you know, that's happened before. We had conversations back then. But a lot of it, you don't want to sound callous, but a lot of it is just kind of serendipity. Things can be done. New York did do them. And certainly out in California, you have to think there may be some racetrack issues because they've had some weather out there
absolutely.
This season as well. So I'm sure they're going to do the due diligence and take a look just the way New York did and see if they can make any of those systemic changes, but also closely look at the track. But, yeah, it was funny that you put it up because as I heard the announcement, I thought of exactly the same thing. We're kind of revisiting territory. We visited before here. So it's it'll be interesting to see what they do and what changes are made, because, as I say, some of it is, and again, you don't want to sound callous, but there's just some kind of serendipity where and these get stringed together coincidentally in a certain time period, when I'm sure they're going to look at the track and make any changes that are necessary. I mean, you know they will, because they took this major step of kind of stepping back and suspending racing on a really important stretch of racing for them. So, you know, they're taking it very seriously.
Well, the they're taking it seriously now, that portion of it, it was not should not be lost. I made the point to Jim that there were 16 horses affected between December 26th and February 22nd, and the circumstance around February 23rd, when both the unraced gelding Just Forget It and Battle of Midway were stricken, that's when this became a flashpoint, when somebody all of a sudden said, oh, this is horse number 17 and 18 since the meet started. Well, wait a minute. Where were, you know, everybody's stamping their feet now. What, 16 weren't enough in the first in the first 8 weeks of the meet? You know, there's some things at work here that when, you know, and I'm not looking to, I said this right off the bat this morning, not looking to, you know, assign blame, but there were some conditions that were created at Santa Anita, which opened the door to this kind of eventuality. And that part of it, once things are straightened out, it can be revisited. But the way in which some decisions were made and the pieces put in place that created essentially a vacuum. And in that vacuum, there was really no opportunity for this kind of problem to be addressed on a timely basis as it was happening, until it was a conflagration.
Yeah, it's tough, and maybe there should be some kind of protocol that says it's a certain number of horses we have to step back. I'm not sure what that protocol would be, but you're probably right. Something should be in place. But I think, like other times it's happened, like they'll talk about New York going back a few years ago, you had horses in the morning, you had horses in the afternoon. It wasn't like, oh, they're all on the turn at this one point.
So it's
tough to kind of pull the trigger and make the decisions, but you're probably right. There probably should be some kind of protocol that says, this is getting to a point where we really have to address this. And it probably shouldn't be as long as it was.
It's not even necessarily having some kind of safety net that triggers concern. The safety net that exists is an atmosphere of communication and trust between horsemen and management. And frankly, the layer, the two specific layers of that management were not available to the horsemen starting in mid-December. And the departure of Dennis Moore and of Rick Hammerly, Moore by his own choice, Hammer dismissed, basically created this. Because as Hammer explained on Friday, and Hammer, you know, there's nothing accusatorial here. It's just a question of relationships. And when you've got somebody in the racing office that horsemen and owners can walk into into his open office and discuss. And then if there's issues that are cropping up, if exercise riders and trainers, if they are sensing an issue with, you know, with the three path, you know, the middle part of the track is a little hard. You know, as Hammer explained on Friday, he's on the phone to a Dennis Moore. When you've created this absolute empty space in the give and take, this is your result, to be honest.
Yeah, and that's fair. I mean, any business, much less horse racing.
Yeah, any business.
Benefits from institutional memory and people who've been around and people who are fluent and friendly with the people in other parts of the business, and that just, as you say, facilitates communication, and that's a bonus. Yeah, no question.
Exactly. I do want to read one thing. I had printed it out this morning, and if you find it, if you look on the Twitter feed, you'll find it. It's the second of the two tweets that address what went on in New York in 2012, and it's a sidebar, a big sidebar that is entitled "What the Task Force Investigated." And just so people understand the working parts, and even though Jim Cassidy, you know, specifically kind of held me off on this topic, it's still worth noting. But in 2012, this is what Jerry Bailey, Alan Foreman, Mary Scalay, and Scott Palmer, this is what they investigated. Reviewed the daily racing programs for each of the race days on which a fatality occurred for indications of horses potentially at the risk of injury. Reviewed past performances and workouts of each of the fatally injured horses. Reviewed and analyzed race videos of races in which fatalities occurred. Created comprehensive case histories for each. Reviewed the State Racing and Wagering Board investigation records for each. Reviewed medical records of injured and uninjured horses as were provided to the task force. Performed risk factor assessment for each fatality. Analyzed regulatory procedures employed by the veterinary division, the NYRA regulatory vets. Reviewed current veterinary research on diagnostic techniques to identify pre-existing conditions having potential to progress to catastrophic musculoskeletal injury. Reviewed veterinary literature on the role and importance of pre-race exam. Retained experts to conduct epidemiologic studies of equine injury data pertaining to fatal and non-fatal injuries. Retained an expert to conduct epidemiologic study of pre-race medication administered. Compiled a summary of potential risk factors to develop an intervention strategy to prevent musculoskeletal injury, and reviewed relevant Racing and Wagering Board, at that time, now Gaming Commission, rules, including claiming, medication, necropsy, veterinary exam, and veterinary practice. And you know, that litany of areas, that just gives you an idea. I mean, it very well may be that Dennis Moore, in a week, 2 weeks, whatever it is, gets this track back to a safe, you know, back to being a safe surface, and that solves everything. But understand all the other working parts, because if it turns out that that track just got too darn hard because of all that rain, then there were horses, obviously, you know, when there's horses as many as, 120 last Monday that worked out, and the vast majority, virtually all of them, came through and were not injured, fatally or otherwise. But horses that are at risk under those other conditions, they're the ones that when the racetrack surface is open to their vulnerability, and being vigilant, and from every standpoint, from the owner trainer side of things, and from the management veterinary regulatory side, it's a comprehensive approach. And in New York, it changed things, and it changed the way even to the jockeys, Seth, that were told, if you don't like the way a horse warmed up, do not hesitate to tell us at the gate, and we'll gate scratch. And yes, those of us as owners and players get annoyed, but too bad. If it's kept horses from getting injured, fatally or otherwise, it's worth the effort. And I think that, you know, everybody, we've said this constantly, everybody has to be ultra vigilant in this era. It's not like years ago where, nobody was keeping track and nobody was really all that concerned about, what was going on this front. Now, everybody is concerned, and deservedly so.
Yeah, and that's what motivated, the action in New York. It's just, as you say, it's a changed landscape. And as you laid out, in New York, it wasn't, they looked at the surface, obviously, see if changes that could be made there. But the report that eventually came out was far more comprehensive than that. It talked about personnel and adding some medical oversight. It talked about changes in the drug regulations. It talked about changes in the claiming rules, as you alluded to there. All of those things happened in New York, and that kind of turned things around. So it was a comprehensive look, not just at the track and the track surface, but all of the factors that lead into horses going to the track that may wind up having that fatal injury. And I think it was a comprehensive look at it. And again, I would tell people to do just what you said. Go back and take a look at that in light of what's happening at Santa Anita this season.
Well, we just, we wish everybody the best of luck, and in particular Dennis Moore, who, as those of you that heard Jim this morning, Jim Cassidy, say that Moore told him last night that he has in his mind an angle and a plan, and that should be exceedingly reassuring to everybody that this can be fixed and done right. And I'm not even going to qualify it by saying fixed and done right, quickly. It doesn't matter how, it doesn't matter when the big cap gets run. It doesn't matter when the San Felipe gets run. And if it interferes with the five, 3 year olds' plans to try to get to Durban, none of that's important. None of it. What's important is that everybody feel secure and confident that their horse is going to go out there and exercise and compete and be safe as possible.
I will say, and I am not pushing quicker is better, but I feel for all the people who are sitting on the sidelines. It's not just the trainers and the owners. You have the concession people and the ticket takers and whatnot, and it's rough on them. So I hope it is able to be addressed in a timely fashion. I'm with you. Don't push it. Take the time that's needed. But I hope it winds up to be something that doesn't put people on the sidelines for too long.
Agreed. Let's get a couple of ideas too, Seth. We've got about 3, 4, 5 minutes to wrap, and your thoughts on Fountain of Youth, actually. What was your take on what we saw?
Hidden Scroll, I put Vekoma on top. I was in doing the handicapping show on Saturday, and I put Vekoma on top of, had Hidden Scroll underneath, and then I had the two horses who actually ran 1-2 right underneath. So I like the four that ran 1-2-4 just kind of in flip-flop order. Vekoma, I thought at the top of the stretch, looked pretty good and was maybe going to make a run, certainly to get second potentially, and then just maybe looked a little green, I don't know, but I'm not necessarily off the Vekoma bandwagon because, it was the first start back in a while and it was the first try around two turns, so I thought that was a good performance. Code of Honor, just another one of those situations that reminds people who maybe are new to the game, don't necessarily jump off the bandwagon based on one effort. I mean, I had Code of Honor down in the third spot. I thought it was certainly playable on a rebound effort, and that's what we got. put the race in under the belt, and off of that improved, and you know, you wound up with over $20. I thought Bourbon of War put in a pretty nice effort to run second. I heard you guys talking in the segment before, and certainly I think he will attract a lot of attention off of that effort. So I thought it was a good performance from Code of Honor. I just thought it was another weekend where I think we're shaping up a lot like last year. Other than War of Will, nobody has really validated from one race to the next, and that seems like a lot like 2018, the Derby trail, and we'll see, because as I say, War of Will has been able to string a couple together. Can Code of Honor now do it in his next start? It seems like somebody jumps up and runs big, and then the next race rolls around a few weeks later, and somebody new jumps up big, and the big performer from last time is, you know, third or fourth or fifth or whatever. And as I say, that reminds me a lot of last year. It was going to be interesting to see what was going to happen this weekend with some of the nice two-year-olds on the comeback. We'll have to see how things shape out in that regard. But again, it was a nice performance of Code of Honor, but just as an overview of the whole Derby trail, I am curious as to see how it's going to shake out in the final set of prep races, and if somebody or more than one can put together a couple of good performances beyond, as they say, War of Will, who's been able to do it.
Well, and we'll have the Gotham and Tampa Bay this week, and ideally the Rebel and San Felipe, if it can be rescheduled for next Saturday, we'll get those in particular. I mean, we're going to get Instagram back, and I suppose with Game Winner and Improbable having to hold off at least a week, that Instagram's presence becomes really paramount on the West Coast two-year-old to three-year-old scene. It's kind of good, actually, maybe, that to some degree Gotham and Tampa Bay Derby will get that much more of the spotlight, including, of course, that cross-country pick five, and we'll know what that is going to entail later this afternoon when the races get drawn at both venues. Seth, how about one push, something at Gulfstream or Tampa today?
I looked at the Gulfstream Rainbow.
Best bet.
The morning line down there is a little funky, but it's 6-1 on the morning line, six race. Charlie the Greek with Jose Ortiz on board, I think. It's a competitive race. I have at the top of the page written competitive, and I think I could make a case for a few in there. But I thought, you know, if you do get a little value on Charlie the Greek, maybe in that sixth race, number one. I have it 1-9-2-3 with Charlie the Greek on top of the sixth.
Well, there may be some harmony to Charlie the Greek, because I'm staying by Tarpon Springs, and I'm going to probably go to either Dimitri's or Mykonos or Hella's, one of the Greek seafood joints on the docks, and get a loofah. You got to get a loofah while you're here.
I didn't know that. I did not know that.
You've never seen the Sponge Divers? The Sponge Divers at Tarpon Springs. It's the sponge capital of the world.
You're laying on me something new, and I've been down there a number of times. I did not know the sponge angle.
Well, that's because they don't sell sponges at the Derby Lane gift shop.
Yeah, that could be it. That's certainly,
it's a greyhound, a greyhound-shaped loofah.
very good.
That's a lot of entertainment, folks. Seth Merrow. There he is, Capital OTB TV, Equidaily.com. Thanks, as always, fabulous. Marty McGee, live and in person. Sid Fernando, of course, Sire Watch. Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Ellen Dale. Pete Fornitzel, and can't thank Jim Cassidy enough for the very frank and honest assessment of where things stand, Santa Anita. We'll know more in coming days. Tomorrow, we'll have all the PPs to start to chew through. Thursday get together. Steve Askin and Tony and Rich Ang and much, much more. Dick Powell as well, little Hong Kong. Happy to be here, Tampa. Let's see if it got over 50. Unbelievable. Good luck today, everybody. You're playing HRRN coverage, 3:00, right here. on the network and replay tomorrow, 6 to 9. If you missed anything, SteveBeck.com. Thanks to Casey. Talk to you tomorrow.
Go killing all the bees.
Hey-oh! The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Hi, this is retired race caller Tom Durkin. So, after this year's Derby, I stopped by Top Round Roast Beef on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches, one for back at the hotel and another for the trip back home to New York. The first one was so good, I had the other one right there. Certified Angus beef, roasted 5 hours, each one made to order. You can taste the difference. Top Round Roast Beef, Shelbyville Road, St. Matthews. Tell them Tom Durkin sent you. Oh, by the way, try the frozen custard too.
Do you ever wonder what happens to your old friends, including the great champions that inspired unforgettable memories, and maybe even let you cash a ticket or two over the years? We even have a former child prodigy.
Here is a superstar. That horse's name is Afternoon Delights, and Kent the Sarmon Afternoon Delights absolutely galloping in the Hollywood Futurities.
These are the champions that help out the horses that might not have won a Grade 1 race, but always tried just as hard. Come visit them all at Old Friends when you're in Kentucky or at our Bobby Frankel division, Old Friends in Saratoga. I know they'll be glad to see you. Go to oldfriendsequine.org or call us at 502-863-1775.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
Check out our website at ua-r
on Shelbyville Road in St. Matthews. I got two sandwiches.
Please state in the past decade the to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time